from Brisbane, Australia. Episode 30 of the Normal Blokes, Invaded by Scary, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40K experience. So listen tight, folks.
Oh, I said Brisbane again.
No one
That's what it said. Okay. I will not say it phonetically then. Let's try this again. Take two. Australia. This is episode 30 of the Normal Blokes, a podcast dedicated to improving the competitive 40K experience. So listen up, everyone.
Woo.
All right. Welcome. I'm Denise. We've got Luke here today as well.
Yeah. How we doing all?
And we're joined by the lovely Scary from Canada. How you going, man?
Hello. Hey.
So on today's episode, we'll cover a few topics. We're going to go through Scary's thoughts on Yanari and some cool combos. We'll be covering some tournament news out of America on the Bay Area Open and just some general post-FAQ pre-ETC discussion. But how are you all going tonight? Well, morning for you, Scary.
Lovely. Morning for me, yes. It's going well. Woke up, had a good nice rest, just had a cup of coffee to start the day anew while you guys go to bed.
Well, Scary informed me that he was so excited he woke up before his alarm.
Yes, that's the way. I was. It was like my eyes opened. I was like, I have to podcast. It was like in my blood this morning.
Hey, I don't know if you get this, but before like 40K tournaments, I can't sleep. Like Luke, I know sometimes you don't sleep either.
Oh, yeah. Well, it depends on the tournament, but yeah, sometimes it's pretty bad. It just takes me ages to sleep.
Love to learn how to just fall asleep. Like even when it's like a major event and I'm like top table the next day, I've learned how to just rest and close my eyes and not care and just sleep because I know that sleep is super important.
Maybe we should change the first part of this episode to how to sleep before a tournament.
Yeah, pretty much.
Step one, be really tired from the day before. Step two, lie down and have a good pillow. That's like the pillow is the key.
It must be like, a pillow.
Must be.
Those Canadian pillows. Pillow.
That's right.
All right. Pillow. So
we sleep on alligator pillows here. So
yeah, we sleep on like little rocks.
In my kangaroo blanket. Might, my tarantula
that
slippers.
That might be a bit of a problem. You know, you never know.
All right. Well, first off, we'll be discussing Yanari. Now, everyone's had a few weeks to digest and process the new Yanari changes. Some people, you know, are quite vocal on what they think on Yanari, but other people are just getting on with it and trying out new stuff. And I don't really play anything with pointy ears, but Luke and Scary both are avid fans of the Eldari. So hit it, guys. What are your thoughts initially?
Internet world, you're listening to the death of the Inari. Okay, Inari, as you knew it, is dead. Okay, there's like it's not right now. Like the new rules, I like the new rules. I think that there's some really good stuff. The thing is, you have to let go. Stop trying to like bring it back. It's not coming back. Don't get your crazy, like double shoot, double move, ridiculous amount of like actions in a limited action game that's dead. Okay, so that's the first thing, is stop trying to bring back the past.
But it was
move
so
on.
Fun.
And if you
so fun.
It was someone who played against it a lot of the time. No.
Nah, yeah,
it was not fun
agree.
To play against. the old Inari was very very strong. New Inari is different. Doesn't mean it's like less strong. It's just different. It's not really like a crazy shooty army with some close combat elements. It's like designed to be different. Very, very different. So you have to forget everything you know or knew and look at it from a blank slate sort of way.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff in that book that's very much close combat focused, which I think is kind of cool. But yeah, definitely like the stock of Dark Reapers in the Inari army is virtually nothing now. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, but there's so many more like tools that you can use now, and the ability to include like the Incarn or the Vizark in, not that anyone ever included the Vizark anyway, but you can include them in Eldar detachments without sacrificing your craft world. Interesting point.
Not yeah, so you get to keep, which is really cool, you get to keep your craft world and your obsession. No, not your obsession, your like race specific benefits.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So Harlequins get to keep Rising Crescendo, which is amazing. You know, Eldar get to keep, or Azuriani get to keep their battle focus, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
They get to keep Power from Pain, which is amazing.
That's strong. Power from Pain is very strong.
Yeah, Power from Pain is a great, great faction trait.
Mm, yeah. I reckon it's the coolest one in the game, actually.
Just well, would I be biased? Yes, I would definitely.
Yeah,
be biased.
I didn't ask you because I knew you'd say it's the best.
You just agreed with me automatically, right?
Yes, indefinitely.
But yeah, the new Inari has there are a couple of really cool like combinations and units that I believe are like sleeper units that we're going to see become quite useful with Inari, which is going to be great.
Caw-caw, caw-caw.
They're back, baby.
We know the sound of that. What is it? Tell us, Gary. What's that sound?
Let's just say that Razorwing Flocks might become a thing again. Early 8th edition, Razorwing Flocks were a beast pack from the Inari from the Drukhari Index, and they were 7 points apiece. And they had like you could flood the table with so many of them, and to the point where they got an instant point increase, pretty much, and because they were silly, doubling in points even. Flocks have been sort of like put to the wayside, mostly because they don't take up a force organization slot in a match play game, so they can't be used to like fill a quick brigade and things like that. However, they're still pretty decent, 4 wounds apiece. They have 4 attacks. They have AP minus 1 in combat. The biggest thing there is they don't really have a save. They have a 7 plus save, so no save.
Oh,
pretty easy to like take out with just small arms fire.
Such a cheap win, though. Are they, what, 12 points now for 12, 4 wounds?
12 points for 4 wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 36 points gives you 12 wounds, which is crazy. Now, the key here is they in an Inari army, I believe they get the Inari keyword because they have the Drukhari keyword, so they switch it. And they would psychic powers and whatnot that target Inari units. And one of them is a 5 plus invulnerable save in a bubble. It's like a shield bubble of a 5 plus invulnerable save. And we all know how awesome that is. If anybody remembers rocket launcher spam, where you could be like, or the Blood Angel tank spam from back in the day, when you could be like, all my bald predators now have an invulnerable save in your turn.
Or the current Sisters army.
Right, with lots of invul like, saves. So now you can have 4 wounded chaff fast moving units that have a 5 up invulnerable save. With the Incarn around, they become fearless. So you have giant blobs of these birds being fearless. And you give them a 6 plus feel no pain save, which means they can ignore damage. So now 36 of them runs you 400 points or so. And that's 144 wounds.
That's insane. That is incredible.
That's so fun.
T2 or T3?
I believe they're T2, but, you know, whatever. Oh, look, they're going to die anyway. It doesn't matter. You know, it's ram. And now with the change to the FAQ to fly, like those little flying things are going to be flying all over the place, disrupting battle lines and wrapping stuff and getting into your tanks in the backfield. And so you know, if you don't kill them, they're just going to be annoying.
Oh yeah, let me help. That's cool.
Yeah, that's just one of the cool things. I like it. Birds are fun. I've run them even without being like awesome, just to like have like a smite spam screen, you know, because they have lots of wounds, so they're really good in that demon matchup. so that all the smites hit, like, you know, birds. But that's, you know, the extent of what I've used them for.
Yeah, it's kind of like when I was playing the Krons for a bit, the Necron Scarabs do a similar thing. They just soak up the smites. It's really nice.
Mm.
Yeah, anything Absolutely. Else? Luke, what are your thoughts on the new Nari? I know you've played a few of the Hero Hammer lists.
Well, look, I played around with it. Still tweaking some things. It's hard because Vindicare's... Every time I tried the list, it was always Vindicare. So it sort of skews your playstyle a bit. But there is potential there. I mean, what I've been using is the plus one attack, plus one move. Although I don't think in our game Denitha ever came into play. But there's potential. There's definitely potential. Just how that potential is going to play out is very, very different. I think
the chapter traits themselves, like, sorry, the Inari trait of, like, always strike first, I feel like it's something that you cannot discount.
Yeah, for sure. I think you just need so to find many ways
different that, units.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can take advantage of that, like, so well.
Yep. Like we saw, what'd you say it was before? Hellions. Hellions do really well.
Hellions are going, like, I've always said Hellions would be great if they had an invulnerable save. You know, because they can be in giant, big, they have giant, big units. So you can have, like, a big 20-man unit. They have good shooting. They have decent close combat. They just usually die like a wet paper bag because they only have, like, a 5-up armor save.
Yeah, T3, 5-up, pretty
combine
sure.
Combine it with the ability to get, you know, a 5-up invulnerable save with the psychic power from the Inari in a big horde. Be fearless because of the Incarn, if they're nearby the Incarn. And then on top of that, just some cool stratagems that are normally obsession-related. And normally the obsession that you would want to take would not let them, like, advance and charge, but there's a strat for that. You know, you can cast a psychic power on an enemy unit and make all Inari units, like, reroll wounds in combat against it. So, like, it's a close combat doom. So that really helps Hellions. You also have a stratagem that can get them to reroll wounds. So, you know, all of a sudden you've got, like, crazy skyboard guys that move super fast, get in your face, and if you kill something, they strike first, you know, like, it could be, or get plus one to hit, like, early in the game, instead of having to wait for power from pain to kick in.
Yeah.
Or if they get plus two to hit, you know, imagine going into a plague bearer screen with a bunch of Hellions that are two damage a pop, three, getting plus one to hit for charging and having soul burst, and then getting plus one to hit for power from pain. And now you're hitting...
Yeah, that's pretty monstrous.
...bearers on, like, your regular 3+. Like, that's pretty cool.
Hmm. Yeah, for sure. Like, it... When that number of, like, additions to attack, like, additions to hit, just start stacking up against an army that's typically really resilient to that charge, it's awesome.
Yeah. So I think that there'll be savvy, like, Eldarian general player will pick the best out of, like, Harlequins. It's gonna reward someone who wants to play with, like, a mixed Eldari army that has, like, a bit of Harlequins, a bit of Craftworld, a bit of Drukhari, and then just taking the best parts out of every book and then putting them all together on the table.
Yeah.
So
my favorite stratagems in that, and one of my favorite stratagems in the Inari, like, White Dwarf is, for one command point, you can pick three different units. One of them is a Drukhari unit. One of them is a Harlequin unit. One of them is an Azuriani unit. And for one command point, you give them plus one attack in the fight phase.
Oh, that's cool.
Pretty good.
So they're all working together.
You have, like, exactly. So imagine Hellions with plus one attack. And then you go, okay, now my big unit of Harlequins, plus one attack. And my big unit of Howling Banshees or Striking Scorpions or whatever, plus one attack. And now you're looking at, for one command point, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So
that's enough rambling for me.
Unfortunately, so I've been reading the Inari index, and I have some bad news, boys.
Oh, don't you dare.
So the Razor Wings don't get the Inari keyword.
No.
Don't they just don't get the Soul Burst actions?
No, they can be included in Inari Detachment without preventing other units from getting it. Note that these units cannot benefit from Strength from Death, but you only get the Inari keyword if you have Craftworld, Cabal, Witch Cult, or Mask, and that keyword is replaced with Reborn.
It's the Reborn one.
But they don't have Cabal, do they?
Or they don't. They don't. They no. don't get the Reborn rule. That's the faction one that then ends up being like how you can build a faction around them, essentially.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm. This is weird.
It's the Inari keyword is at the beginning. It says anything that has Drukhari Inari, they become Inari.
Yeah, it's crazy. So
it'd be at the beginning of it.
It's hard because it's got both paragraphs there. So it's got that one, which Drukhari, Eldari, all that crap gets. Inari.
So Luke, do all the struts and psychic powers in that book go off the Reborn keyword?
No, they go off Inari.
Going back.
They go off Inari. Okay.
Yeah, they go off Inari. But it just says there's a section here that says Allies of the Reborn, and it's Beasts, Incubi, Scourges, and that can be
taken.
That
means they don't get the Strength from Death unit. They don't get the Strength from Death ability, so they don't get the Always Strike First or the +1 to hit if they charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's true, because you can take Inari Scourges. You can. So I guess.
So it says if you decide you can take any any units, right?
Yeah.
It says choose the detachment to become Inari, then all units in that detachment gain the Inari keyword.
No, you are correct. I'm sorry I ever doubted you, Scary.
It's all good.
I was almost
100%. You know, I
was just reading through it and I was like, this is insane, this is insane. And then I was reading the start and I was like, oh, this says Allies of the Reborn part here. What's this? And I saw the Beast keyword, and I'm like, no, is it ruined? Because funnily enough,
they don't get you can't make your little beasties hit on threes.
Yeah.
When they charge.
Well, it's funny because the whole time you guys have been talking, I've been making a Razorwing Flock Inari thing on Battlescrub, and then I was looking up the rules for Inari in the same. So I haven't really been listening, unfortunately, guys. I'm busy.
That's okay. That's okay.
All right, man. Wait, you're furthering your pursuits.
Scary's leading the way. I'm following.
I try and, you know, be a positive influence on the global Warhammer community.
As do we.
He just wants the Razorwing to be played for ETC so Canada can smash us. That's what he wants.
Make Razor.
it's a campaign of disinformation.
Razorgate 2019.
Go Harlequins.
It's Make Razorwings Great Again campaign.
Yeah. The Canada team just rocks up with 8 Harlequin armies.
different styles of Harlequin armies. It's not technically legal, but we will make it so.
I have a friend that's trying to run the Tau 8 competitively, and he wants to just give them all Harlequin heads to just troll people. But
I've seen the 8 at the team event recently. There was somebody who brought the 8 actually.
How did they go?
One of the teams. I don't know how it did individually. All I know is that a lot of people were like, I was so confused. I didn't
overthought this a lot.
I didn't understand what was going on. There were so many different characters and rules, and I was like, it was so confusing.
Well, apparently, like, there's meant to be a guide someone's put up online that shows people how to do competitive stuff with the 8. I haven't seen it. I've just heard that it exists. But it'd be kind of cool.
Kind of cool.
Well, it'd definitely be cool. Like, it's mm-hmm. there's a lot of rules out there that don't ever get looked at. And when I saw the 8 came out, I was looking at it, and I thought it was pretty interesting. But yeah, I mean, I was yet to be fully persuaded into pursuing it. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Mm. So Luke thinks it's a hunk of shit.
Well, yeah. Well, but what do I know? So come on. I mean, I just thought Razorwing Flocks don't get an Inari keyword. So who knows?
It's all good, man.
I say
you know,
that
you,
as
it's
I'm
okay to say that you.
Sorry,
as you're clicking purchase on razor with flying boxes.
Luke, on zombie side.
Luke just literally ordered, like, how many?
Enough. That's all you need to know. Enough.
Two boxes of Zombicide Murder Crows. Yeah. $70. Oh, well. If Lennox is listening...
Hey.
Yeah, I was going to say, sorry, Len.
Yeah, I'm in trouble. I'm going to jail now.
No, I really like it. And you know, and Inari, like, has some really cool stratagems and stuff in there. And I get all the cool, like, you know, like, the one thing I will say is I do not understand why they made Fire and Fade 2 command points.
Oh, scary. I got the best news for you to counteract my terrible news before. But this one's legit. Fire and Fade got FAQ'd back to 1 CP in the Inari index.
Really?
Yep. I dare you to check it now.
What?
Yeah, man, they got a secret buff.
There you go. Well, I will eat my words because I was like, why in the world is Fire and Fade 2 command points if it's one command point in every other codex? Okay, then I'm happy again.
Yep. It's funny. So you check out the Warhammer FAQ, and it has the new index in Inari in there, but the only entry it has is Fire and Fade 1 CP.
It's okay.
It's like they just suddenly went,
I'm happy.
Guys, we fucked up. I'm going to slide this in here and not say anything about it and pretend like we didn't fuck
anyone. and the warlord traits are good too. Like the minus one damage or the half damage and five up feel no pain.
Man, it's nice.
That one's really good on your Wraith Seers if you're using Forge World.
Ooh.
Mm, yes.
That is kind of cool.
Mm, that's a giant Wraith Lord with a damage negation.
Yes.
And a D cannon.
Is also, a Wraith Seer under 10 wounds or no?
Nah, he's over. Mm, I think he's 12.
I think he's over. Yeah. Is he? Yeah. But he's so tough. They're like toughness.
Yeah.
Eight.
Yeah.
He's really nice.
He's T8. I think he's got a 5 up imbo. Is that right?
An imbo save, yeah. And then a 5 up feel of pain now and half damage, which is fun. And then the relics. I really like the Hungering Blade, which is a crazy wishes it was.
The Hungering Blade?
Plus 3 strength, 2 damage.
Yep.
And for every 6 wound, it's a mortal wound on top of that.
Yep. Strength 3, AP 3. It's very good.
Luke, what was the thing you were playing, Luke, that gave additional attacks every time you killed something?
It's like Cog High's Locket or Sega. I can't remember off the top of my head. Something
each time an enemy unit is destroyed by an attack made by the bearer,
plus one attack
for the remainder of the battle.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Move and attack. That's fine.
It's kind of like a souped up soul trap stratagem.
Yes.
Yeah. Specifically for characters, but this is for like. So you make an autarch with like a bike and like a whole bunch of war gear, go around, and you basically murder the units down to like one or two men, and then you let the character kill the last members of the unit, and then basically just soup himself up to like level 9,000 and just run in and like and murder everything.
Take on Mortarion or something, you know?
And then die, and then guess what? There's a stratagem to bring them back to life.
Yeah, boy.
When they die, which is
and
great.
And you can heal him too at 18-inch range. It's awesome.
Yeah,
psychic power. Cool. That's what I was doing, but...
Actually, that bringing guys back one, that's that one power, the you know, the healing, or you can bring a model back from the dead.
Mm.
I really liked that. I played a really fun game where I ran Incubi, and I kept on just bringing Incubi back from the dead, and it was great.
No way. There's a lot of talk about bringing Wraithguard back, because they get
that works too.
With Inari, they get the plus one, they can advance and charge, and do all that crap. Mm. And with the Wraithseer as well, you can take Inari Wraithseer. Well, you can take a normal Wraithseer and then Inari Wraithguard with the axes and 4 up invo, and you can make them charge 3d6, pick the 2 highest with that Wraithseer power, whatever it's called.
Oh, does it still work on the Inari?
Yeah, it just says pick a friendly Wraithguard unit.
Oh, sweet.
The only thing I guess we need clarification there is that any Inari Psyker has to take Inari Discipline at least... X, but maybe that one's like that. It's like a conflict, being like, don't use any powers, just use these powers for the Wraithseer. So I guess I'd have to see how that's worded. But regardless, it's one of those things that you wouldn't normally look at, right? But you know, the Inari just gives new light to a lot of these units that you might have discounted.
Yeah.
So take another look at like your shelf where everything's gathering dust, or your pile of shame with all the boxes of stuff that you haven't built yet. And just check it out. See if there's anything in there that you go, ooh, I wonder if this would work. And give it a chance.
Yeah, 100%. Like it's kind of like sorry, did I cut you off, Scary?
Nope.
Oh, okay. So my internet's just playing up. It's kind of like when Sisters got the beta codex. It it revitalized some of the options, which is really cool. And Inari obviously is a way bigger change than that. But it does let you experiment with a lot of new stuff.
I'm already messaging Eric about the Razorwing Flocks.
Uh-oh, what have I done? What have I done?
Eric's Nid carpet turns into Razorwing carpet.
Eric wins the ATC.
For the scourge on the planet that will be bringing back the Razorwing Flocks.
You're gonna be so mad when you verse Australia at ETC and they've got 36 Razorwing Flocks.
Scary's gonna get a
fuck. Why did I say
Scary's gonna get a call from Chris Haynes tomorrow morning? What did you do?
We wanted to bring about the rebirth of the god of death. You know, let's do this.
All right. What's the next thing on the itinerary, D?
The Bay Area Open, mate.
Or the Bao, as most people call it.
Bao.
Right?
You like Vietnamese food, the Bao.
EAO. It was a good tournament. I will say I liked their format this year.
The final eight.
I think in competitive 40K, lose one game and still come back to win it is super important. This game, and sometimes, you know, you just have one of those bad games. It doesn't reflect on you, your skill as a player. It's just sometimes you just have a bad game.
Yeah.
Being able to have a bad game and still just show that you're consistent, I think that's super important. So I really liked that they had a seeding to a top eight and made the whole event nine rounds instead of just straight six.
I think
increasing the round number, or at least bringing it down to like a top eight and then having knockouts essentially, is really a really effective format. There was I can't remember what podcast I was listening to, but they were talking about if you're running a 64 player event, you need to have either the sixth round or, you know, keep going from then on to make sure you get a definitive winner. I think they did a really good job of doing that at BAO.
Yeah, you know, and it's really good because, you know, it's all about that matchup and stuff like that, you know, and in 40K, like, you know, like in a lot of games, in order to find like the true winner, you'll have like best of, right? Like in any competitive sport, you have like best of, you know, best of seven, or, you know, you have, you know, in Magic, I think it's three rounds, isn't it? Or best of five, is it?
I think so. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Five and like competitive Magic. You know, in 40K, you don't really have the luxury of playing the same person three times and doing a best of three, because that would take forever, even though that would probably be more reflective of player skill versus like dice luck or whatever. Having more rounds and being able to lose or draw a game and then still make it into like the final runnings, I think that's very reflective, and it's a more natural way of doing it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh man, imagine if LVO had a fourth day, which was three games for the first final two.
That'd be
crazy.
Nuts.
Yeah, like an actual best of five or something, or best of three. That'd be crazy.
Person would need an IV drip after that. They'd be so fatigued.
Then again, you could have no, like, there would be no doubt of who won that event.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, be like, yeah, you earned it. You earned it. Good. Here's your $4,000 or whatever it is nowadays.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind playing till I drop for $4,000.
Look, I wouldn't turn that down either.
But yeah, congratulations to Jeff Robinson, In Control, StarCraft announcer, 40K announcer, and Imperium player extraordinaire.
Oh, mate.
For dethroning Jim Vessel for the top spot and taking the W on that one.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
His list though was really interesting. Didn't really have like a lot of like infantry or anything like that. You know, he kind of relied on like hiding most of his stuff, and then using those nasty Forge World Custodes units.
Oh, man,
the beautiful Forge World Custodes units. I'll quickly I'll run through his list for everyone who doesn't know. He had a Custodes Spearhead with it's Constantine, but it's actually Trajan. One elites of Aquilon Terminators, which is what we talked about earlier, but they had the Flamers and Solarite Gauntlets, so the cheaper version. I can't remember the Solarite Gauntlet, but anyway, we'll come back to it. He had the Vexilla with the Magnifica, so neg one hit, and a Castellan Axe, and he had two Caladius tanks with the accelerator cannons, which are what did I say it was? 8 shots at strength 8, neg 3, and D3 damage. And then I think it's 6 shots at strength 6, neg 2, 1 damage. And then he had the Telamon Heavy Dreadnought, which is I think it's 4 shots at strength 9, neg 4, 3
straight
damage. Straight
3.
Flat. Yeah. Straight 3, yeah, that's right. But they reroll wounds against vehicles. And then he's got a catch hand. Oh, sorry.
It's also got a 4-shot heavy bolter.
That's right. And if he stands still,
it can shoot twice. Yeah, if it stands still.
Yep. Is it? It's strength 6 though, right? Is it strength 6 the heavy bolter, or is it heavy bolter profile?
5. I think it's just a heavy bolter profile.
Okay.
I could be wrong.
Then he's got a Catachan battalion, the Emperor's Wrath, which is company commander, grand strategist, company commander, Core of Aquila. 3x8 troops with 3 mortars. The heavy weapons team. Oh, sorry, heavy Wyvern. Basilisk.
Wyvern, yeah.
Yeah, Wyvern, Wyvern. Australian versus some.
Yeah, yeah.
Canadian.
I say potato, you say.
You say
the Barbie. No.
Potato.
Boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew.
And then he's got a Gria or Grya battalion, however you want to call it. As Grya.
Ooh,
we have a Grya battalion.
Rusty 17.
Yep. 2 engine spheres, 15 ranges with 3 arquebus, 3 omnispecs, and assassin stratagem. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. He's got the Grya for the sneaky deny as well. That's cool.
Yeah, Grya's really strong, man. I don't, because it's, they got a 6-up, they don't die, rather than a 6-up, feel no pain. Which is insane. It's like a shit shield drone.
Do you remember the old Bionics from like 3rd and 4th edition that you could buy for Space Marine characters?
Nope. We started playing in end of 7th, man.
I don't think Luke was alive.
Okay. So back in the day, this was a 5-point upgrade you could give your characters. It was called Bionics. Essentially just a bionic arm or leg or whatever. But every time your character died, you'd put him on his side, and then you'd roll at the end of like the turn, and on a 6, he would just stand back up with 1 wound remaining.
Bloody hell.
So it was like the best 5 points, because every once in a while, your like killy character would like lie down, and then just like, you hit a bionic, you know, it's just a flesh wound, and then you'd keep on going. And anyway, it just reminds me of that, because they don't die, essentially. It's surprisingly good.
Yeah. But Luke, you said you watched that game on stream.
Jeff and Jim.
Yeah, how did it all go? Because I missed it, actually.
It was a really, really good game, really tight game. There were it was so back and forth, hey, until it sort of got towards the end, and spoiler alert, well, actually, everybody knows now, but it started going further and further into
like 8 times, yeah.
Yeah. further and further into Jeff's favor. There was a point I was watching. I can't remember what turn it was. I think it was about turn four. Jim had his plague bearers basically across the board, and Jeff at this point really wasn't killing enough of the plague bearers as he needed to. And I think he Jeff was getting a bit stressed because he was shooting his assassin, and his assassin, he chose a Vindicare, if anybody wanted to know. His assassin just really wasn't doing anything. He kept rolling ones. And then there was a point in the game where Jeff came forward out of his gun line and decided he had to start playing the game for objectives, otherwise he was going to lose, which was the right decision. And he came in and charged the plague bearer line to sort of stop them from moving too far. He charged it with his what's it called? The Caladius tank. And then charged in a character as well. I think he charged in the Vexilla, the banner. I can't remember. But he charged in them two, or two units, possibly. And then he moved his Demon Prince, which was the big Corn Axe Demon Prince, like the big big chomper. But he moved it over the Plague Bearer line, so it could be shot next turn. And then charged it into, you know, the tank, and it was basically out the front of the army, and then it got killed the next turn. I think, for me, that was, like, when I saw it happen, I mean, maybe in recollection, well, looking back at it, maybe I'm not remembering it correctly, but from what I saw, I thought that was a big mistake because he just threw away his big answer to the tanks, really. And after that died, Jeff still had both his tanks because one of them lived with like two wounds left or something, and he had nothing to kill it with. And then they just sort of wreaked havoc from then on. But there was another point in the game as well. Jim moved his Demon Prince to smite this tank, which I think had like three wounds left on it. And he goes to smite it, and Jim's out of CP, and he rolls double ones, and the Demon Prince has like two wounds left, right? And it blows up, kills itself.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it was just... Yeah. It went downhill from there for poor old Jim. But aside from that, it was a very, very tight game for the first few turns. Like, you thought Jim was going to win, then you thought Jeff was looking better, then you thought Jim was going to win, and then, yeah. Awesome game. I recommend everybody go watch it.
Yeah, it was so, like, high-level competitive play is, like, so tactical, and it's usually, like head by... Your chances of winning are, like, a string getting pulled on both ends, and sometimes the string just snaps, and it just kind of, like, flips in one player's favor, like, at a critical point in the game.
And I will say this as well. So watching them too, like I've been watching a few games with Jim and a few games with, well, just this game with Jeff. And I've watched maybe the other one where he played, I think it was Carlos. He played Carlos in an earlier game, maybe. I think it was Jeff. But they're both very, very direct and very affirmative in what they're saying and what they're intending and how they're playing. And a lot of the chat was going on about how rude they were being. And I don't think that was the case, but I actually love how affirmative they were. They're like, it has this many wounds, it has this, it has this many shots, it's very direct. Like, there's no chance of misplay, so to speak. Like, no rules got muddled up. And I think that's kind of what everybody should sort of aim for, if that makes sense.
They're not being like, it's weird. I don't want to say fake nice, but they're not being like convoluted in any way. They're just being as direct as possible. So there's zero chance, like you said, of any fuck up.
Yeah. Because I think they both know they're top level, top table, being filmed. They both want to play the cleanest game that they can. And from, you know, seeing Jeff previously in games and also hearing him on some podcasts.
Jeff Tactics,
he's very affirmative, very, very, I will not cheat, as in, but his definition of cheating isn't like cheating, it's if I mistakenly misunderstand or misinterpret a rule at some point. So he's very anti that. He's very pure in the game, very pure. Let's call it pure. I think that's the best description. Yeah. Very pure in the game, his gameplay. And I respect it, I think it's awesome.
yeah, I mean, Scurry, having played at, you know, high levels as well, I'm sure you can give some input there on, you know, that type of interaction.
Yeah, like, you know, to get to like a top level, there's a level of assertiveness that you have to have, but every person is different and every game interaction will be different. And personalities, like, it's not like they're having a terrible game or whatever, but a lot of the times when you get into that sort of competitive mindset, you know, it's not unusual to kind of be like, can you just remeasure that again, or let me measure that, like, you just, because just keeping everything within that framework and making sure that the game is like as tight as it can be, you know, it doesn't mean you're being a jerk about it, you know what I mean? Yeah. Even though it might sound to like the average player that you're at each other's throats, that's not really the case, because it's hard to get the feel of the game if you're not the people playing the game.
Yeah.
And that's why it's good to have perspective. You know, we can make up assumptions, but if you hear Jeff and Jim talk about it, they were talking on like chapter tactics about their game and stuff. You know, a lot of the times it's just how, like, didn't feel it was that much of a big deal. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I'm sure when you're in the game, like, there's so many other things you want to think about. Like, you're probably not even thinking about, you know, is that guy a jerk? You're just trying to get on with the game and do what you need to.
Exactly.
Hey, Oi Scurry, can Inari witches get in a venom from Blackheart?
You lose the
Drakari keyword?
You don't lose the Drakari keyword, so you might be able to, yes.
Fuck yeah. Oh, damn.
I'm in the process of making my list, that's why.
Yeah, so it seems like that would be the case. The only thing is you lose the Witch Cult unit to Inari or whatever. Witch Cult Inari? Or is it, do you lose the Drakari keyword for Drakari Reborn? I don't.
I think it's Witch Cult for Witch Cult Inari from memory.
Yeah. In which case, then, yeah, because Drakari transports have this uncanny ability to just take.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's anyway, not die.
Back on topic. Sorry, I just needed help making this list. That's all.
It's all good. Yeah, it's just Cabal or Witch Cult with Reborn Drakari. Cool.
So any other interesting lists? Now, I noticed Don Hoosen was at the BAO, and Don's quite famous for making unorthodox Chaos lists. And we talked about this a little bit before, but he had three Helldrakes from The Purge, Legion The Purge. Three Lord Discordants, the Lord Discos having a party.
The Disco Lords.
Disco Lords. And three Hellforge Contemptor Dreadnoughts and three Hellforge Derridaeo Dreadnoughts, all with Butcher Cannons and Havoc Launchers.
Nice.
So, he, you know, mixing up the Butcher Cannons, they seem to be pretty popular over in the Armorikas. Scurry, do you...
Yeah, they just shoot a lot of... You know, they shoot a lot. And the key here is he's using the Purge, which... new Renegade books from Vigilus Ablaze, which gives them their chapter trait is essentially as soon as you kill or wound to a unit, all of a sudden your entire army kind of like rerolls misses against them, which is crazy. It's like you just want to kill that one unit.
That's insane. So reroll all hits to a wounded unit.
I think it's reroll all to hit rolls, not reroll all missed hits. I could be wrong, but I think it's like the good version of the rules. And then on top of that, their stratagem, they get to shoot into combat.
Yeah,
nice. That's
fun. Pick a unit to shoot into combat. So it's very hard to pin the army down and have like the Hellforge Dreadnoughts with a million shots shoot out into combat to get themselves out of combat, you know, and it's just...
That's pretty strong.
Yeah, and then the Helldrakes are harassment and tying up units and tanks, because they move very, very far and they can charge after they move. Mm. So they move like 30 inches or something and they can charge after they move.
Yeah. It's a pretty good list.
And they fly, yeah. which now with the FAQ means they can jump over screens and things like that and whatnot.
I remember when the old fly rule happened before, when fly was removed from the charge phase, I had a bit of a bitch to Denise about how useless Heldrakes were. Do you remember that, Denise?
Yeah.
Like a Heldrake, a big flying monster, just flies over and it's like, oh, there's a little wall there. All right, I can't charge over that anymore. Cause
there's like two guardsmen there. Oh, sorry, bro.
Yeah. And they're a flyer. It just blew my mind. But thank God it's back. Like, it's pretty potent now, because they can just, fly over any screen. Oh, there's your big, unit that shoots everything. I'll tie up those three while my Butcher Cannons just clear the table. And my Lord Disco's run up the board not being shot at.
Yeah, and, Don runs, I think he has a blog that he's done about his armies. And, last year we saw him make the Light Lord Terminators a thing.
God.
Last year's BAO.
Yeah.
And then the LVO that year, he was the one that ran like a whole bunch of Plague Burst Crawlers to just show that they were, that to just show GW they were like fucked. No one was playing him. Mm. He ran like six or seven, or maybe more than that. So he definitely has some wacky lists, but he's got a blog that he posts his tournament lists and tournament reviews on, and he was saying that the Heldrakes are just so sneaky at just like diving in a gun line and saying, deal with this while the rest of his army just does his thing. Mm. And later when if the Heldrakes are still alive, you can just dive characters, flame them, charge them and stuff. And like, it's really, really strong.
It's definitely pretty strong.
Yeah. And Heldrakes have, Heldrakes also get the +1 to hit when you're attacking something that has the fly keyword, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They take down flyers pretty well. That's right.
You know, and especially in a meta that has like a lot of like fly spam lists and whatnot, with like all the Craft World Eldar shenanigans, and then you combine that with like the +1 to hit from Gordons on the demons and stuff like that, and the ability to like heal them up and like all this good stuff. So
that's very good.
Mm. Yeah, Lord Discos have been hitting the net as well. Scurry, what do you think about them?
I played against them at the team tournament a couple of weeks ago. They are like tough cookies to crack.
Mm.
And I'll tell you, when they kill a bunch of like little venoms and then get to do like mortal wounds to stuff near them.
Oh shit! Yeah.
Because they have their like supercharged up beam where they're like bazap,
Yeah, they're pretty cool. Yeah. They're only 160 points, man. I dare say that they're better than Demon Princes at that cost.
Well,
they have a lot of attacks. They have shooting. They move. They're tough to kill. They have like all these abilities, like latent abilities. They have like making tanks -1 to hit when they're nearby. Stuff like that. Like it gets pretty intense.
Yeah, and it's just so cheap though. 160.
Because they're in that same ballpark as like a Custodial Shield Captain, right? And yes, they're targetable, but they're so much more durable.
Yeah, the thing is now, because Chaos, the new Chaos stuff, I think it's Chaos characters get the Legion trait, is that right?
Yep, they do, so now they can advance and charge if they're renegades or...
Which is
really awesome.
For Alpha Legion.
Or you can give them -1 to hit, or you can make them, just be nasty in general.
Mm. Yeah, man, they're no joke. I really like that list, actually. Really like it. Other question. I'm just probing Scary's brain for our viewers. Now, So Tau are pretty strong in the Australian meta, Scary. How are Tau over on the other side of the lake?
Tau are one of those armies that you have to know how to play against, because there's a lot of really, really good Tau players. Especially in our scene, there's Devin Swan, who's one of the best Tau players I've ever played against.
Mm.
They have some... They're strong. They've got some really good combos.
They're super strong.
That's right. Devin's really good with his Warhound Titan on a Sky Shield landing pad. Hey.
he's now moved to town, so he's playing. I think he played 9 broadsides. He played a very similar list to Manny Chima at the team tournament that we had.
Nice.
But he's been developing ruin your opponent's day with a shooting phase list. But Tau, one of those things that there's a lot of Tau players, but I don't think a lot of Tau players understand how to play Tau properly. They just kind of think they can sit there and just shoot and then they lose. So it's not reflective of how strong the book is.
Yep.
But you get like a good general behind a Tau book and they just have like the tool to deal with like every situation. Then you know, they can move, they can shoot you, they can snipe your characters. If they have sniper drones, they can kill tanks, they can kill infantry. And I think the book's good. I think you need to keep that in mind. If you haven't played against Tau, you need to like get some matchups against Tau just to feel what it's like to go up against like, you know, re-rolling hits and wounds broadsides and just kind of like take it and then understand how much damage they can do.
I understand exactly. You need to hide and just take the SMS because and still be like, whoa, the SMS hurts.
Yeah, exactly.
it's just crazy. I actually think they're in a fantastic spot, but I just don't think many people are exploiting the power that they have.
Yeah.
So we had ATC where we had a few unique lists, and we had some players play. It was Adam Camilleri. He played 9 hazard suits, and those hazard suits are no joke for Tau. They have their neg 2 charge
shots.
And 48 strength 5, well, heavy bolter shots essentially.
Yep.
Yeah. And they're just insane. When you add that to the whole theme of the list, and you just put them at the front, you know, beside your drones, in front of your broadsides, you can't charge.
Or a forest.
Yeah.
Don't Tau have like a neg charge drone as well that they can get?
They do. Oh,
you need a Pathfinder team for it, though. I think, funnily enough, I was just looking at the...
You're charged within 12 inches of the drone as well. So the drone has to be, like, really close to the front lines.
Yeah,
true.
So speaking of that, the person who came third at the BAO actually had 2 of the grav inhibitor drones.
Oh, good man.
Slightly different, but he's run Triptide, so 3 Riptides.
On that mark, I'm seeing a lot of stuff on competitive 40k with my with one of my favorite armies, the Necrons.
Yeah, wasn't it a small like RTT or something where 2 Necron players came top 3 or something?
I'm pretty sure like someone went 4-1 or 5-0 at a GT.
Two weeks ago, that I covered a GT that had a 5-0 Necron winner.
No way. Do you remember the list vaguely or?
So it's 3 Doom Scythes, 3 Doom Scythes, 3 Doomsday Arcs, 30 Tesla Immortals, 9 Tesla Jet Bikes, and then a couple of characters.
Nice.
Yeah. So lots of speed, lots of shots, and a decent anti-tank.
Yeah. I mean, if I could source 3 Doom Scythes, I could try out 3 Doomsdays, 3 Doom Scythes, and like just 5 Ghost Arcs and just run at people.
Have you not seen the competitive 40k old cover photo?
Which one's that?
It was the cardboard model of Lord Discordant. Just do that. Someone literally had like a cardboard model of Lord Discordant.
Oh my god. Well, I've recently borrowed 3 DDAs. So,
and then, dude, even at ATC, there was a dude who had, I think he was playing some sisters or something, and he needed the front of a tank, but they made the list too late and they didn't have the parts, so they just got some cardboard and stuck it to the front of the tank and painted it.
Oh my god, legend!
Yeah, it was pretty funny. It looked terrible, but I gave it respect.
You gave it respect because he lost some playing it.
Pretty much.
Fella. All right. Any other interesting stuff from BAO? Did you mention there was a Seer Council list that did all right?
Oh yeah, of course. So there's a thing we've been playing around with, particularly we're playing around with it for our team event here, ATC. But we ended up not taking it. It's kind of hard to play. It's very, very. You have to be almost flawless in your play, because you have basically a huge Seer Council unit. So Warlock Seer Council, they're T4, 3 wounds apiece, generally -1 to hit. And they're very strong because you've got 3 psychic powers. So you make them -1 hit with a Lair Talk, have enough CP to make them lightning fast every shooting phase, and also give them the 3 up invo, 5 up feel no pain in an ideal world. But the list is very hard, so if something doesn't go right and you kill something or they're able to get out of combat or you're not able to wrap, things can go south pretty quickly, so it's a very hard list. But it also has a gimmick that because you use the Windrider Host Vigilist Detachment in the fight phase, they can interrupt in your opponent's turn, fight, and then fall back immediately after they fight, so you can avoid getting hit in combat too much. So basically, the idea is that you have this Death Star unit that can't be killed. But it's pretty hard to execute.
I think he ended up running up against Jeff and lost to Jeff, I believe, in the top tables, just because Jeff was like, wait, just Grya stratted the Quicken, so they were just like stuck in the middle of the table.
No way.
And then they got eaten.
That's painful.
That's oversight there. Does he have Quicken on the unit, or did he have it on a separate model?
Not sure. All I know is that Jeff talked about that game. He said he just waited. He was like buffing, like all these, like, and then he was like, and now I'm gonna do like move again. And he was like, and Grya Strat says no. So you're gonna sit in the middle of the table.
Oh no.
And die.
That feels like such an oversight, because I would have made, like, if I was playing that, I would have, I mean, I say it now, probably wouldn't have done it in game, but it would be like my key priority to make sure that I was out of range of that.
Yeah. Hey, did you know with the Warlock, that the Seer Council list, the Conclave, you could decide which one of the models casts the power?
Yeah, that's
pick
right.
Pick a point, so you can have one model outside of deny range.
Yeah, that's what I would have
thought. That's hilarious.
Yeah, Eric taught me that you string out the Seer Council and then cast from the back dude who's like 30 inches away.
Yeah, because I played him, I think, with either Krons or Sisters in Deathwatch that had the deny, and he had a bit like 25, and he's like, I'm casting from this one.
Yep.
That's hilarious.
It's pretty strong. It's similar to Grey Knights. Grey Knights have the same thing. You select a person in the squad to cast the psychic power.
Yeah, nice. And, yeah.
Pretty potent. But yeah, he did pretty well at BAO. He came... Where is he? 5th, Jack Harpster. Very nicely done.
Nice.
It's very hard to play that list. Very, very hard.
Yeah. But yeah, anything else on BAO, gents?
Got anything for us, Scurry? Got any juice?
Any juice?
Any juice?
Orange? Guayaba?
Oh, there's a Space Wolves list, but I can't view it because it's not uploaded.
sad. Probably Wolfen are involved.
I wish Wolfen were good. Hey, well, but yeah. So shall we talk some pre-ETC meta?
Yeah. Well,
let's do it.
You know, anyone who's listened to our show knows that we had the Australian ATC. Recently, a number of those players that attended that event are going to the ETC, and Scurry is, I believe, your vice captain of Canada, hey?
Yes, my good man.
Yeah, so Scurry is going with Team Canada to the ETC. We probably won't bother explaining the ETC format because it's very similar to the ATC format that we have explained a few episodes ago. But yeah, what do you guys think is going to be really prevalent there?
Eloquence.
Harlequins, yeah. Well, look, I mean, turns out Team Canada's taken 5 Harlequin lists, so, you know.
That's right. I feel like we won't really know what it's going to really look like until they release the Renegade Knight list.
Yes.
Renegade Knights are going to, like, throw, like, a giant wrench in a lot of teams, especially if it's released before the cutoff date, like the Knights were last year. Where Knights were released and then every army had like Renegade Knights and Knights.
Yes.
Because it was like, you know what I mean? So I guess we'll really see how that shakes it up.
Because you can just absolutely destroy matchups. Like if the other person puts up something that can't handle Knights, you just drop those two in. And it's like, see ya, we win this.
Exactly. So we'll see. Like that's my biggest prediction. That and, you know, since us talking here, we'll probably see some Razorwing Flux. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some like Inari shenanigans. Especially from like Sean Naden or something, you know, with like a bunch of witches and, you know, like all this crazy stuff.
I think Liam stopped playing the Mega Knob, so people forget about him for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, Mega Knobs are not bad. I like Mega Knobs for like an orc list. I feel like the FAQ change to the looters not being able to mob up was a secret buff for the orcs because they stopped trying to do silly things that didn't help.
Exactly. It stops like everyone just shoehorning 25 looters into a list.
Exactly.
I'm also a big advocate. So Liam persuaded me. He has solidly turned me onto tank busters. They are, I reckon, Luke's 15 tank busters, man.
Yeah.
Are they the truth?
Tank busters are beyond the truth. Who's more truthful? I'm trying to think of a quick, smart, truthful meme I could drop, but I can't think of anyone who's truthful. They're Jeff Robinson level of truth. There you go.
I don't know. So like
that's like truth. True.
You're talking like Alex Fennell level truth.
Nope.
Oh God.
Shit. I forgot what I was gonna say now.
Something about ETC leaders. Stuff. Yep.
Oh yeah. So tank busters.
Meganods. Yay.
Fucking tank busters. What the fuck is that? dude, tank busters, man. Eldar flyer list gone. Knights gone. Mech list gone. Just from one unit.
Yeah.
It's one unit that, you know, 15 shots and somehow they get like 15, 16 hits. Who knows?
Because they're hitting on fire. You can even just like troll with them. Like Liam was saying, he jumped tank busters into a building and left the bomb squigs hanging out of the building, used the bomb squigs, and then he was totally out of line of sight. It's hilarious.
Yeah. It's nuts because the bomb squigs die after they're used. Yeah.
It's so funny.
But they're 18-inch range, so he dropped in outside of all spec scan range in the building on an objective and then just went, all right, bomb squeaks, shoot, and now I'm back out of line of sight. But the funny thing is, he called over the TO and goes, oh, I'm planning to do this, but I just want to make sure it's legit before it happens. And they're like, well, I can't see how it's not. And he's like, cool. Bomb squeaks, you're going to shoot that?
That's fucking funny.
But they're super potent, man. Like, the 15 shots with the bomb squigs and, you know, they're reroll hits against vehicles. So 15 shots turns into 15 hits because they have exploding fives rerolling. So it becomes 55% on top of 55%. So they get 15 hits.
Yeah.
Generally more. Somehow they, on average, generate 15 plus hits. And then, you know, strength 8, neg 2, 3 damage flat. You end up doing about 6 or 7 wounds to a knight, let's say. And yeah, it's like 9 damage, do it all again to a different knight. But the thing is, you can, you know, they're 24-inch range, so you don't have to drop them in, you know, aggressively or anything. And they can always hit their target, so they're super, super strong. And they're relatively cheap for what they do. They always take their points off. Like,
yeah, and it's so hard to screen for because they actually have a decent range. It's not like a 12-inch plasma squad.
Yeah, 24 inches is huge, man. Huge threat range. For a deep strike squad, at least.
Yeah, it's like when we had to screen out for obliterators and stuff. Like,
so far. The coolest part is a bomb squig that's a one use only somehow gets 2 shots.
Oh, yeah.
A bomb
when
squig.
When you dack at the bomb squig.
Right. Yeah, they morph into. Well, haven't you seen the model? Isn't there like a bomb squid riding the bomb squig? You know, like on a six, kind of separate into 2 bomb squigs.
Oh, fuck.
one piece of dynamite in one spot and like blows up, or eight, you know, there's lots of different ways you could justify it. Let's just say that they're good. Okay.
Just see like a Doctor Strange circle open up and an extra bomb squid come out.
They believe that it'll explode twice, therefore it does. Good old psychic energy that the orcs have.
The orcs have, yeah.
Oh, God. But yeah, it's really cool that we might see some new orc stuff. Everyone's about the old the cheap smasher gun now. People are like, oh, what if we ran 18?
I've played against the freebooters smasher guns. Yeah. And they trigger this like plus one to hit bubble of doom.
Yeah.
You know, and then you combine that with like a bunch of shock attack guns that are now hitting on fours. Oh, it's it gets pretty rude pretty quickly if you're not careful.
Because I played an orc player at ATC and he was like, he was thinking about how to combat like the Death Watch matchup before the Bolter rule. And he's like, you just take all these smasher guns and the Death Watch just bounce. They're so cheap. What are they, like 20 or 30 points for like a gun?
30 points,
yeah,
for a gun that will kill like most tanks.
Do you want to do a quick rundown of the profile?
It's heavy D3 shots, and I believe it's what, strength 8, neg 3 or 4?
No, it's it rolls to wound against...
Oh, that's right, against toughness.
It rolls to wound against toughness. You roll 2d6. I think if you roll equal to or higher than the toughness, you wound automatically. And then it's d6 damage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a monstrosity for 30 points.
It's so good.
Do they roll a save or no?
Neg 4.
Yeah, I think it's minus 4, yeah. So you if you have an invol, you know, if you're in cover. But other than that, like it'll smasher you.
Yeah, like I was plinking them off Storm Shield, so I didn't care. But like I was just thinking if they had like 10 plus of these, because you can get them in units of 6, just like the tractor cannons. Like you would just wreck a mech army.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be like, you know, that would be sub 600 points.
Yeah. You know, even against knights, you need an 8 on 2d6. Like, it's so reliable at, like, wounding.
Yeah.
But, yeah, other than that, I think that that's really going to... We're going to see some cool stuff there.
What about Nids? How are Nids looking over there?
You like just the generic Nid stuff. I think Tyranids need a bit of an update, to be honest.
Yeah, they need a bit of love. Like, there's not much. As soon as like Eric stopped playing them here, I don't really see that many of them.
They get used a lot in like in conjunction with Genesee Occult. I see.
That's the only thing I see them with. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, what about Genesee Occult for? Oh yeah, sorry.
Mute for a second.
Denith, have you played the old GSC matchup? You played Wayne's GSC?
Yeah, like...
Come on, it's not an episode unless we plug in Wayne somewhere, right?
Yeah, I know. It's been... We need 30 from 30. look, I mean, it's hard for me because what I've been playing recently is to gear against Orcs and GSC, like the Death Watch, the Sisters. So, like, the GSC drop in and kill a tank, I'm like, cool, and then I just wipe them. But, against certain things like GSC just ravage orcs so badly, like especially the list who started playing the three vultures in America, one of the Mugu guys.
John Lennon who
Shermanator always talks about him on the podcast.
Yeah.
He's run the three vultures. And they make the orc matchup insane because you roll up the vultures, you target them, they grot shield, you vect it, and then you just murder everything.
Yeah. It's just so many shots. The vulture's like 40 shots, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's insanity. And like the flamer bomb comes in and just kills a whole unit of boys or a whole unit of whatever, and then like it's done.
Yeah, well, it's crazy that like the boy meta isn't in Australia, but it's quite prevalent overseas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 90 to 120 boys normally. But yeah, Genesee Occult is not just good against orcs, it's good against knights, it's good against like guard. Like that, like Genesee Occult is one of those like really toolkitty style lists.
Yeah. It's a, guard just struggles to match GSC. It's like, cool, you have auto line of sight shooting, so do I. You have this, so do I. But I can also blow up all your tanks in one go.
Yep.
And Vector.
Yeah, and Vect anything. But I find against the GSC matchup, because that Vect is one use only, if you bait it out, then it's just like a big sigh of relief. And then you can
as soon as they use it, you're like, ah. Yeah. I find against Drukhari, it's used a lot to Vect my Vect.
Yeah, well, that's fair. But then you're kind of happy, right?
Yeah, it happens. You just, you know, just
Vect a bit later.
Unless they roll a 6, then I'm very sad.
Yeah, then it's like, time. But, I mean, yeah, I think GSC is in a good spot. I think it would be silly to say that there won't be GSC lists at ETC because they do well against so many things. I think there definitely will be GSC lists. Whether they have NIDs involved is another question because, you know, in our Australian ANZ ATC, we saw a lot of Gene Steel Occult lists run with a Termagant screen of about 60 or 80 Termagants in front of it.
Yeah,
because, like, they were, you know, a Fearless screen, which GSC struggled to have without the Patriarch, so... but yeah, it'll be cool to see what comes out of ETC there.
I'm excited. Like my whole, ever since I've been to ETC, like my whole year is now sort of like gearing towards ETC again. And I can't believe it's like only 10 weeks away or 9 weeks away now. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really close. End of July, right?
First weekend of August. So yeah.
Oh, really? Okay. August, yeah. Okay. Yeah, cool. Yeah, anything else, Luke?
Eloquent list. Get excited.
Oh. Shout out to our boy Linford, who's running a Harlequin Brigade for potentially Winter Warfest. Pretty out of control. It like just fits into 1,500 points. Take that, Scary. Take that to eat.
Player spam.
1,500 points for Harlequins, yeah. I've actually been, I've done a whole 20 game series on playing Harlequins.
Actually, yeah, you did.
And I really enjoyed learning how to play them. It was really fun. Like I learned a lot, like just in general, just from playing them. And I got inspired after playing Blackie at the ETC. You know, he was one of the main Harlequin guys.
Mm.
And there were so many cool little tricks that I'd never seen before, and I was like, I would like to learn this. So I ended up. trying it out, but yeah, they've got some potential, and with the new Inari, you never know, you could see some really cool combos in there.
Well, yeah, that's right, you know, with an army that's already quite good at you know, the fight phase, you know, they got so many attacks. But yeah, well, anything else before we close off the show, gents?
Not at all.
No, I just gotta
unless you do
buy these Murder of Crows, that's all.
Hey,
well, hey, Scary. Where can I know you've been on the show a few times, but where can people find you online? Where can they find your content?
The easiest place to go is YouTube. You go to Skardcast, SKAREDCAST. You can find all the links to that, from like the coaching services I do to the Patreon to everything. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Name it. It's a media empire I'm building. It's exciting.
Nice. Well, thank you for coming on the show. You're always great to have on. The insight's great, and it's good to have someone from, you know, the other side of the world where the toilets flush the other way to tell us how 40k is. Any closing
it's
remarks?
It's gonna be our summer soon.
Yeah, good man. Anything, Luke, before we finish?
No, just thank you, Scary. Thank you for the tips on Inari, and I'll put them to test and let you know how they go.
Luke's not going to sleep tonight.
I'm going to be with Lennox tomorrow night, and I'm going to be making lists, and she's going to be like, Luke, get off your phone. I hate when you're on your phone making lists.
All right, well, this has been episode 30. Oh, Scary, sorry, cut you off.
I said, as in, yes, I'm excited to hear of all these crazy lists that come out of Australia.
may or may not include Harlequins. Thank you for listening to episode 30 of The Normal Blokes. If you liked our content, please give us a like and share on Facebook, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Leaving us a review helps new listeners find us. But have a good rest of the week. See ya.